April 21st, 2022. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels. YouTube, Twitch.tv, Apple Podcast. And if you're listening on Apple Podcast, please leave a rating and review. It will help us out tremendously. And if you have a smart speaker, you can listen to us on there. Visit our website, thesportscast.net, or also our app, The Sportscast for iOS. It's that time of year. Tyson Fury coming out of the woodwork. I hear some clips of him on the radio sometimes, and he's hilarious. But anyways, we got Sean from the UK. What is going on? Welcome back to The Sportscast.
Thanks for having me, as always, Santiago. It's a pleasure, and I'm looking forward to this weekend. Every time we get together on The Sportscast, it's always about either a big fight or it's about something that's just ridiculous in the world of boxing. And I'm glad you always think of me when it comes to either one, because I'm always happy to give my opinions and feelings about these big fights or these farcical incidents. So thank you for having me on, as always.
Anytime, Sean. You're one of the nicest guys I've met. Tell us, give us an update on your life and your professional life as well.
Oh, busy, guys. I've had a 10-day break. A holiday home not too far from where I live. So we just traveled there with the family over the Easter period, had a break. Still busy with the podcast. Obviously, you guys know me in the US for doing the podcast and all the different series that we have. So I'm back. I'm busy doing podcasts. This is my first one this evening. It's 5 p.m. in the UK now. So by 8 o'clock this evening, I'll be doing another podcast that's going out tonight as well. Again, it's another podcast relating to this heavyweight fight. It's relating to the last time two British fighters entered the ring in the UK to contest the world heavyweight title. So we are going to be talking about Lennox Lewis versus Frank Bruno from 1993 in tonight's podcast. That'll be going out a little bit later on all our platforms. But the main topic of conversation for this one with you, Santiago, is Tyson Fury and Dillian White, World Heavyweight Championship, WBC and the Ring Heavyweight Championships on the line. Saturday night, how excited are you for it? And what's the perception of this fight in the US at the moment?
You know something? I've been hearing the previews on the radio. I've been seeing, hearing the clips, watching the YouTube video. I was asking you about like the Wembley Stadium location. You thought, no, this is not the first time. So when I saw that, I was like, wow, this is huge. Event sold out, 93,000 people. So it's going to be a really packed Wembley. I know Wembley as a place, you know, for football, FA Cup, championship games, England, the Euros. But seeing a boxing match in Wembley is historic. Fury, I love him. Whenever he talks, I listen. I mean, obviously his brother, little brother, was going up against Jake Paul about a couple months ago. I heard Fury talking crap about it. And now for this fight, he's looking forward to it. He's motivated in his home country. Two Brits on the heavyweight, which is, I guess, is unusual, might be a strong word. But what is your preview about that? Is this one of the biggest fights in a while? Or, hey, it's post-COVID. It's time for a big fight like this.
It's the biggest British heavyweight fight for a long time. Yeah, absolutely. It's a good way to put it. Like, I was just talking about it then when I said the last time two Brits fought for a world heavyweight title in England, in the UK, was 1993. And that was like, 29 years ago? 29 years ago. And now, 29 years later, we're getting two Brits fighting for a heavyweight title once again. 94,000 people at Wembley Stadium. Initially, the application was for, I think it was 80,000. That was accepted. And then when that sold out within minutes, the promoter, Frank Warren, basically asked the local council for an extension to be able to put it up to 94,000. So 94,000 tickets have apparently sold out. And it's going to be a packed house on Saturday night in Wembley Stadium. And it's a huge fight for boxing, a huge fight for British boxing in particular. But there's obviously, you know, a moan that we're going to have here. I call it the 3 or 5 minute moan, which is what we do in our podcast. We always have a bit of a moan about something every week. And the biggest moan for me is something you've mentioned to me off air, which is, you know, you've heard there's a bit of a pretty weak undercard, and that is the case. It is very weak undercard. But the excuse for that, the excuses that the promoter brings to the table for that is that when the purse bids were put up for this fight, Frank Warren, Queensbury Promotions, in association with Top Rank Promotions, they put up £41 million, or about $45 million. And that was literally the majority of their money and their budget just for this main event. So what they're saying is the undercard is, if people have got criticism about it, it's because of the fact that they've spent all the money on this one main fight, and the rest of the money is for everything else. So they've only been able to put a certain amount of fights on. They've only been able to pay fighters a certain amount of money to fight on this card, which makes it weaker, a lot weaker for the event that it is, because this is my personal opinion, and everyone's entitled to it. Two British fighters fighting for a heavyweight title in England, in Wembley Stadium. You know, this should be a huge card. There should be more fights on there involving British fighters that are fighting opponents that are worthy of fighting them. You know, you've got Tommy Fury. You mentioned him earlier. He's fighting a nobody. You know, no disrespect to his opponent in that regard, but nobody knows who he is. You know, there's a couple of fighters on that card who are fighting journeymen, or fighters that are sort of lined up for them to beat and look good doing so. That's not the type of card we want to see. We want to see at least two or three other fights on that card where fighters are fighting live opponents, opponents that are going to potentially beat them, as opposed to fighting guys that are just there to survive and get a paycheck. And that's the unfortunate event about this whole thing for me. Is like, we're going to get to see this fight, which I do think is going to be a great fight, and we'll talk about that, of course. But, you know, that's probably going to live up to the expectation, but the whole card isn't. But then, I suppose, in the grand scheme of things, what will you remember from this card? If this fight turns out to be one of the great heavyweight fights of the last decade, are you really going to be that bothered about the rest of the card when it's all said and done? I mean, that's the question I'd sort of ask you, Santiago, is, given the position that I've mentioned, if this fight turns out to be a fantastic fight that's remembered for 10, 15, 20 years, will you be even that bothered about how poor the undercard was?
I wouldn't think so. I think if I had to look at the past fights, Sean, I don't remember the undercards. I really don't. Like, yeah, you might point out, well, that's when Mike Tyson got big or whatever. But I wouldn't. I think the big fights overmatch the undercards by far. I mean, I watch a lot of boxing, you know, events for the past 20 years, obviously. But the undercards, man, I can't even name one right now. I can't. I mean, maybe wrestling, but not boxing. How about you?
It's a fair comment. I mean, that's probably what I think people will remember is how good of the fight, or how good this fight is. Hopefully it won't turn out to be a stinker, and hopefully it won't be too strategic where, you know, it makes it unenticing and lackluster. I genuinely hope it turns out to be one of the great British heavyweight fights of all time. I really do, because, you know, we have got two guys in there that I think will go for broke no matter what. And that's what I think is what's exciting about this, is you've got one fighter in Dillian White who has clawed and scratched his way to this moment in his boxing career. I mean, Dillian White started on all the small hall shows. He started on all the shows that don't get televised, that have no coverage, or the media don't attend them that often. He started on the very bottom of the ladder. Whereas Tyson Fury was a little bit higher up, because he was put onto a platform because of his stature, because of his family lineage, his heritage. There was a story there with him from day one. So he was always given more exposure than someone like Dillian White. So for Dillian White, I said it on our podcast earlier this week, he's clawed, he's scratched, he's fought his way, he's took risks, he's took chances, he's lost on his way to this point, and he's got to the point where he fully deserves it. So I expect nothing less than a guy that will go out on his shield, that will literally have to be carried out of the ring. And it's horrible to say it, but that's the type of mentality he has as a fighter. He would rather be carried out of the ring than just succumb to, you know, Fury's tactics within the ring. He'll go for broke, and if it means he gets knocked out, then he gets knocked out, but at least he'll walk away from it saying he tried. Whereas Fury, I think on the other hand, Santiago, I think with Fury, it's different because, you know, he's had this journey. different journey than Dillian White. He came up, he made history by dethroning Vladimir Klitschko, and then obviously he had his mental health struggles. We know the story. It's a repeated story many times, and that's why he's come over to America and he's had the fights with Wilder, and he's created this fan base over in America now, where people love him over there, because, you know, in America, you guys are not used to seeing a character like that. You know, trust me, there's many people like Tyson Fury in the UK that are absolute characters like him. Just casual people that you will find in the cities of in Manchester and London and Birmingham and Liverpool. You know, you find characters like that everywhere. But because he's on the platform he is, it's quite refreshing for Americans and Canadians and Australians to see this type of mentality and attitude towards the sport and towards life in general. So I can understand why it is so appealing for all the different fans across the world. And that's why people are mainly in his corner. I mean, I've seen today, Dwayne Johnson sent Tyson Fury a good luck message. You know, that's the sort of reach he's had now. He's got this, you know, former professional wrestler, as we know, The Rock, and this mega film star now. You know, he's reaching out to Tyson Fury to say good luck on your fight. So that's how much Tyson Fury has put his stamp on the boxing world.
Which I would say The Rock might be the closest to Fury's character, but obviously he's not day to day like Fury right now. White, what do you think? I mean, he's currently number one for the WBC. Do you think this is his moment to outshine, to say, I am the number one if I beat Fury? What do you think is his stance for this fight?
Well, I watched the press conference yesterday. Very, very respectful press conference. Now, I don't know if you've been following any of the sort of pre-lead-up antics where, you know, Dillian White didn't turn up for the original press conference to announce the fight. He didn't bother turning up. He said he had his reasons for that. He didn't feel he was being treated very well by the promoter, so he decided not to turn up. And he wasn't contractually obliged to turn up either for that particular one. So he's turned up yesterday, done the press conference. It was all very respectful. It was actually quite entertaining. And it didn't need a shove, or it didn't need someone throwing a table or a chair to sort of hype it up. It was, you know, two guys that I've got respect for each other, that I've you know, been friends outside of the ring to a degree and spent time together outside of the ring to a degree. Both know what each other are capable of in the ring. And what I got from Tyson Fury's side was that, you know, at first when I seen him the day before in the open workout, he looked a bit flabbier than he normally does. I mean, he's not the stereotypical, you know, physique of a heavyweight boxer, but he's very effective at what he does. And he looked a little bit flabbier, and I thought, you know, is he overlooking Dillian White? Yeah, I actually started to wonder. But then after seeing the press conference yesterday, I actually thought, I think he might have trained really hard for this. He might have trained the hardest. He says he's trained the hardest he's ever trained before. And I think he might have done, because I think he knows the danger that Dillian White possesses. Like, Deontay Wilder possessed a danger element, and it was always the big right hand. It was always, if he gets through with that big right hand, he's going to hurt you. He's going to put you down, like he did to Tyson Fury. But Dillian White is different. You know, this guy punches with both hands. His technique's better than Wilder's. His footwork's a little bit better than Wilder's. He does pose a completely different threat. And he has got one of the best left hooks in heavyweight boxing I've seen for a long time. So there is some fragilities there that Tyson Fury has, where he has been dropped before. He got dropped by Steve Cunningham many years ago with an overhand right. And people have been putting that image and that video on Twitter and Facebook and saying, this is potentially what's going to happen to Tyson Fury again, because Dillian White kind of throws these unorthodox overhand looping right shots, and it could be quite possible that he's going to get knocked down in this fight. And this is what makes for an entertaining fight. It's like people automatically think Fury's won this fight already. I don't think it's going to be as straightforward as what people think it's going to be, but I do think it's going to be an entertaining fight, and I do think we are going to see knockdowns in the fight, but I don't think it goes 12 rounds.
What does it leave for Fury? Where is his legacy? Does he need this fight? Does he need this win? What if he loses? Is he still going to be talked about one of the greatest? What are your thoughts?
He needs the win. I remember after the Deontay Wilder third fight, I put a tweet out. It was either on my personal Twitter account, and it was either on the BTR account. It was one of the accounts on Twitter. And I put it out and I said, Tyson Fury, this is what he needs to do to be considered a great heavyweight champion and go down in history. He needed to beat Dillian White. He needs to beat Anthony Joshua and Alexander Usyk. They were the three names, logically and realistically, that for me, he needs to beat to be able to walk away from this sport and say, I've got an argument to be in there with one of the best heavyweight fighters of all time. People's argument against that was, well, why does Dillian White become the gatekeeper to greatness? It's never been a case of Dillian White's the gatekeeper to greatness. Dillian White has, like I said, clawed and scratched his way to this number one contendership. He's taken risks that many other fighters wouldn't take. He lost to Alexander Povetkin in shocking fashion, if you remember, right? During the pandemic, he lost without a tremendous uppercut. That tremendous uppercut put him out, and he avenged that loss. But all the other fighters he's fought, the Joseph Parkers of the world, the Oscar Rivases of the world, everybody that was put in front of him, he has fought and he has beaten on his way to this title shot. It's long deserved. So he's going to go in there and give it his all. But Tyson Fury needs this win. And no matter what Tyson Fury says about, oh, I can retire after this fight, I'm considering retiring after this fight. Surely, if he retires after this fight, he's not really legacy fulfilled for me. I think at his age, I think he's probably got a year or two left in the sport. For me, the way I see his career now has to be, he has to beat Dillian White, and then he has to fight the winner of Alexander Usyk and Anthony Joshua when they fight again later this year. He has to fight the winner of that. Win, lose, or draw after that, then maybe we can look at where his legacy sits from there on out. But for me, he needs them victories. He needs them wins before he can go out and honestly say, I am a top 10 heavyweight, or even as bold as saying I'm the greatest heavyweight of all time. He needs to have that on his record, because as it stands, his record consists of a great win over Vladimir Klitschko and one draw and two victories over Deontay Wilder, which when you look back at history, isn't going to go down as favorably against some of the other greats of all time.
Tyson Fury, only 33 years old of age, as Sean was saying, maybe one or two more years, but he was saying that set up of Usyk and Anthony Johnson could be set up for that one big fight, maybe till next year. We'll see. But yeah, that is the storylines when it comes to the sport of boxing. Looking forward. Let's go into the undercards and see how much Sean knows about these guys, and we'll see if he can predict a winner. Let's go for the super featherweight match between Anthony Kasachi versus Jonathan Romero. Who do you got for that match?
Well, if you've not already seen the news, that one has been cancelled, unfortunately.
Oh, wow. News for me.
Yeah. So that fight's been cancelled. It's been pulled off the card because Jonathan Romero couldn't get a visa in time. And in replacement of that, is actually a really good replacement fight between Echo Asuman and Darren Tetley. British fighters will know both of these guys as being fighters that are on the cusp of moving forward in the career to sort of European level. So they were supposed to fight next Friday, the famous York Hall in Bethnal Green in London. But they've brought that fight forward now to the undercard to replace the Kakachi versus Romero fight. So that's a really, really good fight, by the way, and will act as a chief support for the main event. And I think picking a winner, Echo Asuman is a fight I would recommend that American and Canadian fans should go and look out for. You know, he doesn't get the same level of exposure as what many other fighters do, but he performs in the ring, and that's all that matters. And it won't be long before people start talking about him as a great fighter and start mentioning world-level fighters for him to face. He's got to get past Darren Tetley, of course, this weekend, but it is a great fight. It is a great replacement fight. I feel for Anthony Kakachi because he trained for 3 months for this fight. He spent 3 months away from his family, and he put a bit of a heartbreaking post out on social media yesterday about it. I feel so sorry for him, but this is sometimes what happens in the sport.
It happens. Isaac Lowe versus Nick Ball.
So Isaac Lowe, for anybody who doesn't know who he is very much within Team Fury. He lives the gypsy lifestyle for quite a long time. Never really fulfilled the potential to predict to get. Guy. I've been following from day one. When I first got into boxing media or even going to shows, Nick Ball was one of the first fighters I seen at the very start of his career. So I've seen Nick Ball's career from the start and I've seen his progression. And looking at the size of him, he's only about 5'4". And you look at the size of him against most of his opponents and you think, nah, he's physically outmatched. But I tell you what, he makes that advantage of being small an advantage indeed. And I honestly think Nick Ball will beat Isaac Lowe in this fight, and it will propel him on to further accolades within this sport.
Tommy Fury versus Bosanski. Tommy Fury, of course, was rumored for Jake Paul. Did not happen, but he's going to give it a jab with Bosanski. Maybe leads to a Jake Paul fight. What happens? Who do you got, Sean?
Tommy Fury has been, it's been set up for him to win. And as I said earlier about the event, I mentioned about how some of the fights on this card are literally set up for prospects to beat the journeyman fighters. This is another one of them. This is not really a step up for Tommy Fury. If he wants this Jake Paul fight and he's serious about it happening and he really wants to put this, he needs to go out there and he needs to be calling Jake Paul out, and he needs to be putting to bed all these rumours of him being afraid fighting Jake Paul. Because I'll be honest with you, a lot of fight fans in the UK, a lot of British fight fans, you know, contrary to the belief of us supporting our own all the time, he got a lot of stick from our own fight fans for that, for pulling out of that fight with Jake Paul. Because at the end of the day, Jake Paul, you know, he hasn't had the same upbringing as Tommy Fury. Tommy Fury comes from a fighting family, from a boxing family, whereas Jake Paul has just gone into this using his platform, and he's actually been mildly successful so far. And opponent, Tommy Fury's a live opponent. Fury's not fought nobody as well. So it does actually intrigue me to see, like, these two guys get in the ring. As much as I've never really supported the whole YouTube boxing thing, you know, actually, Jake Paul seems like he's made some improvements, but you're never really going to truly know that until he fights somebody that is of a similar size to him, has actually got a winning professional boxing record and isn't just an MMA fighter crossing over for a payday. When he fights a real fighter, that's when we're going to know if Jake Paul's taking this sport seriously or not.
I agree. Jake Paul needs to fight a real boxer, and Tommy Fury might be the best bet for him. David Adelaide versus Chris Healy. Is this another setup?
Yep, 100%. Again, I know Chris Healy. I've met Chris before. No disrespect to Chris. You look at his record through BoxRec, you'll know that he's got a 50-50 record. He's lost as many as he's won. Not to say that he might upset the apple cart here, but David Adelaide is being touted as another British heavyweight that's moving forward in his career. And that's what Frank Warren's trying to do. He's trying to slowly mature this fighter. And this is what Frank Warren has done for many, many years in boxing. He likes to mature his fighters quite slowly. So he'll build fighters like Adelaide up for 10, 15 fights before he lets them loose on a live opponent, so to speak. So let's see what happens. I expect an Adelaide knockout. I expect him to knock Chris Healy out within 3 rounds. And then hopefully his career will progress following this and he'll actually start to face tougher tests.
Carol Itama versus Mikal Ciach.
What can I say? Most of these fights on this undercard are literally meant. I know you're laughing, but you know it. You know it's true. Like, these fights are meant to showcase the prospects against the journeyman. It's as simple as that. Anybody who didn't know that before, this is how a lot of boxing works, in the sense that they need to build these fighters up. They need to build their reputations up. If you put a fighter in there after two fights and he fights a guy that's got a winning record, the chances are he's going to come up short pretty quickly, because he hasn't had the experience of fighting guys that have different levels of attributes. And although these guys are journeymen and they fight on the road and they fight every week or every other week, they know how to fight. They know how to survive. They know a lot of tricks to fight on the inside of the ring that'll teach these younger fellas to come through and how to prepare them for the better, more skillful fighters. And that's literally how the business side of the sport works. So I expect victories for all the prospects on this. I'd be very surprised if there's an upset or if a journeyman takes the W on Saturday, but I highly anticipate that it will be you know, if you're looking down BoxRec's list, you'll see win, and then maybe in the main fights, you'll get to see possible upsets, which, well, you never know. We never know what's going to happen on Saturday.
So, Itama.
Yeah, Itama all the way. Yeah, all the way, 100%.
And I'm assuming Barney Smith over for Jafavis Harre, right?
Yep.
All right, 100%. I guess. Whoever's first is going to win, pretty much. And Walker over Nicolay.
Yeah, Kurt Walker is an Olympian as well, so he's just starting his professional career out. He's actually genuinely got a lot of skill and a lot of ability. Irish Olympian from the 2020 Olympics. So there's hope for guys like that, you know, you'll get to see them maybe fast-tracked a little bit sooner because of their amateur experience being so deep, and they've had hundreds of fights, you know, through the amateur career, and he went on to the Olympics as well. So, you know, for fighters like that, it's a little bit different. You know, they tend to try and fast track them a little bit more depending upon their experience prior to becoming professional.
There you have it. Okay, now the main fight, Sean's the prediction of the week, Fury versus White. How many rounds and who wins?
Do you want a long answer or do you want the short answer?
Ooh, the short answer, can it be like 2 minutes?
I'll make it as quick as I can. Right, okay, so let me try and put it in a nutshell then. Obviously, we know Tyson Fury is coming off the back of this victory over Deontay Wilder. He's not fought since then. Dillian White, obviously coming off the back of his victories over Povetkin, retaining his number one status as the challenger for the WBC title. Experience-wise, both got similar levels of experience. Tyson Fury more because he's fought better fighters overall. But in terms of the fight itself, the styles in some ways do make this fight. So you've got Tyson Fury's physical natural attributes, which I'll expect Tyson Fury to fight on the back foot. I'll expect Dillian White to be the one that pushes the fight and comes forward, whereas Tyson will probably look to bamboozle Dillian White with combinations off the back foot, using his footwork, using his lateral movement around the ring. You're going to expect to see Dillian White trying to push Tyson Fury. I mean, this is what I'd want him to do personally. You know, if I was advising him, you'd want to push Tyson Fury. You'd want to try and trap him against the ropes. You want to try and work his body, try and slow him down, try and stop him from moving around the ring as much, try and get your shots off. So I'll expect a fight where maybe 2, 3, 4 rounds in, it's going to be tentative, I think. I could be wrong. They could both come out the blocks from round one and just start throwing haymakers. You never know. But I anticipate that it'll actually be tentative for a couple of rounds. Maybe 3, 4 rounds in, I think you'll start to see the fight open up a little bit more. In terms of predictions for this fight, it's hard to go against Fury. But I do think he wins, and I do think he does it between rounds 10 and 11. I think he gets a late stoppage against Dillian White. Dillian White's shown before that he does, after about 6, 7 rounds of a fight, does start to slow down quite a lot. What we call he gasses quite a lot after about 7, 8 rounds. If he's in the prime of his life, physically wise, for this fight, hopefully he'll go a full 12 rounds and he'll put it on Tyson Fury till the end. But my suspicion is that he will gas after about 8 or 9 rounds. That's where Tyson Fury will capitalize. He'll start getting through with more harder shots, maybe put it on him a bit more at this point. And I think he stops him either round 10 or round 11.
There you have it. 10 to 11 rounds of Fury action. I'll be watching it 2 p.m. Eastern over there at 7 p.m. BST, UK clock time over there. So it should be quite interesting. I can watch it comfortably, not tired, you know, over here because the fights start around midnight, but over here is a little bit, a little easier. So looking forward to it. So tell me your update on your podcast and history podcast and all that.
Okay, so recently we've started recording our new season of the Legendary Knights podcast. I hope you guys have checked this out. If you haven't, please do go check it out. It's literally all the greatest fights of all time, and all the greatest stories that go with them as well. We tell them stories, everything that maybe you didn't know what happened before, during, and after these fights. We look to tell these stories. So we've done two full seasons of that. If you haven't checked it out, it is on Apple, it is on Google, any podcasting app you can check it out on. If you've not checked it, go and check it. So we are recording season three at the moment. So there'll be 10 episodes being released around the middle towards the end of June. And then The Dark Side of Boxing, which is a lot of fight fans' favorites podcast at the moment. Because
my favorite, Dark Side, is it's probably the best. You guys well document these history events of these boxers.
So The Darker Side of Boxing, October is the proposed date. We haven't got a finalized list. We've got a list of 10 episodes again, but it all depends on the logistics of being able to make sure we can put them episodes out and have as much content as available within them, as in the stories. We have to go surfing the archives for newspapers. We have to go surfing. There's so many different ways in which we put these episodes together, and it's all the material to get it together, which is the most difficult part. So we're looking at 10 episodes. We've got 10 episodes already ready to go, but we're just uncertain about sort of what order they're going to go in. So we'll be finalizing that list, and then we'll be looking at releasing that around the middle of October this year. And then Career Profiles, well, that's a continuous podcast. We look to try and do 1 to 2 episodes a month. The last episode was on Charles Sonny Liston. The next episode, which is due to be released in about a week and a half's time, is on Joe Gans, another fighter from yesteryear, another fighter that maybe not a lot of people know about. And our job is to kind of try and present them and educate people on these forgotten fighters. Not all of them are forgotten, of course. Not going to do him any disservice there, but some of them are from a very long time ago, and their stories, I feel, would need to be told once more.
Yeah, today, actually, Mike Tyson had an incident in the airplane. I think it was last night that he punched a passenger, and I guess the passenger was high or drunk, and Mike Tyson just shut him down by punching him, if you heard the story.
I literally, jumped on the sportscast. I seen it, and I retweeted it from the Beats account, because I just thought, Mike Tyson, like, why? What possesses you as an individual, as a human being, knowing Mike Tyson sat in front of you, what possesses you, high or not, to go and piss this man off? Like, what possesses someone to do it? Because Mike Tyson, even though he seems to be a lot more chilled out these days, a lot more relaxed as in his demeanor, he's still always going to have that demon side to him. And he says it himself in his podcast. He said he's always going to have that there. So this man's patience can only be tested so much, no matter how much he's calmed down over the years. And this guy, I've watched the video, I retweeted the video. This guy was an absolute jerk. It was simple as that. He was obviously high or drunk or whatever it was that was up with him. Why did he antagonize Mike? Why did he choose to do that? Because, I mean, you just don't do it, do you? Like, why would you do that to Mike Tyson? You know what you're going to get. Some people just push the boundaries and the limits, don't they? And this is what happens. And now that what's going to be so sad about this now is this guy is probably going to go like, oh, I've got life-changing injuries, or I can't go out of the house anymore because I've got anxiety. This will be the sort of guy that kinds of milk this now, which is sad because, you know, Tyson's, like any human being, has just been pushed to his limits and he's reacted to it.
Or maybe was it a publicity stunt for him to come back to boxing?
I wouldn't go as far as that. I genuinely, watching that video, this guy's pissed him off. It's as simple as that. This guy's just been, it's like when you go on an aeroplane and you have that screaming, annoying child sat behind you. That must have been what it was like for Tyson. But he had a fully fledged adult sat behind him, acting like a 3-year-old, annoying him. And obviously, you know, you don't really want to condone the violence, but sometimes, you know, he's obviously done something to Mike that's pissed him off so much that he's attacked him. It's not always the way to deal with things, as we know. I'm not condoning it, but every man has his limits, and Tyson's got his. And obviously something's happened that's made him lash out at this individual. Which,
yeah, yeah, we'll see what happens. Too much mushrooms could. But hey, must be a privilege to get punched by Mike Tyson. Not many people can say that.
No, not many people can say that. I'll tell you what, there is a bit of news, Santiago. I don't know if you're aware of this bit of news that's come out yesterday. Manchester's Ricky Hatton is coming out of retirement for an exhibition bout against Marco Antonio Barrera in Manchester in July the 2nd.
How old is he now?
43.
That's not a bad age to come back, though.
No, it's only an exhibition. It's for charity.
Yeah.
Him and Barrera have been pals for quite a long time, to be honest. And, you know, something like this, I don't disagree with, because it's an exhibition. The rules are pretty straightforward. There's going to be no winner at the end of it. It's not a fight where, you know, they're going to have to put everything on the line to be a winner. It's not like one last hurrah for Ricky Hatton or Barrera. This is literally just, they've got a pulling power. As fighters, they've both got a pulling power. Manchester will come out to see Ricky Hatton no matter what. But with Barrera also being on the other side of the ring, Manchester's going to come out even more because people are going to want to see Barrera, regardless of how past his best he is, or, you know, the fact that he's coming out of retirement to do this. It's a bit of a star attraction. It's them using their boxing notoriety to be able to do something good for charity. And for that, I can't argue against it.
Might be the hottest ticket in town.
I think so. I will have already emailed them today, and I've already asked them, you know, how does the press get passes for this? How does our podcast get a credential to go into this event? Because Manchester's my hometown. It's where I live. I live within a suburb within Manchester, and, you know, I would love to go to that event. I would love to be there. I'd love to be able to interview both Ricky and Marco for this, for the podcast. So I was straight in there this morning, straight onto it, because I would love to get both of them onto the podcast and put some interviews out there and have a chat with them and go and see the people that will turn up, because you can guarantee there'll be a lot of people from the UK within the boxing fraternity that will turn up for the event. So it would be good to go and see a lot of those people as well.
Worth the listen. I hope you get those the access to these boxers, and hopefully and I'll for sure listen to it. Of course, Manchester is a bigger boxing town than London, right? Is that what I've heard?
I don't think people from London would agree with that, but Manchester, for me, has been a hotbed for the sport for quite some time. They've produced some great fighters, some great world champions over the years. London is as well. I can't argue with London not being a hotbed for it. I think it's open to opinion. That's what I'll say. It's open to opinion.
Yeah, same here in the States. It's either New York or Las Vegas. Some say Los Angeles in the mix. So I wouldn't consider Florida, to be honest. Florida is getting into it, but they don't have the rules adjusted good enough as Las Vegas, per se. But it's all into debate. It's healthy banter. Why not? All right, Sean Bostow, what is the best way to reach you online to talk to you about what is the best British food to eat in the States?
I was waiting for this to come up. So before we get into this topic, then you can find me on Twitter at Sean SEANBTR Boxing. You can find me on there, or you can find the podcast at BTR Boxing Pod, and find all the other podcasts through that main Twitter account, or Facebook, or Instagram, or even YouTube as well. British foods, then, Santiago. This is the best part of the conversation. British foods.
I like now, it. It's fair.
Well, I just want to put a bit of context to this for the people watching the cast and listening to the cast. Like, me and you exchange WhatsApps quite often, and every now and again, I'll see your name pop up on my phone, and then I'll see a picture, and I'm thinking, he's going to send me a picture of something here, of something to do with, like, an English delicacy or an American delicacy. And a lot of the times I get to see, like, the British sort of markets that they have in America. And, like, for what it is for us, it's like ordinary box standard stuff that you would see in the average supermarket. But for you, it's like a niche, isn't it? Like, you go there for that.
And it's quite funny because I Googled more, and there's a couple more stores besides that one that I showed you. So there is a demand in some capacity. What I've heard, people from the Bahamas like British food. That's what I've heard. That's why. And there's a lot of Bahama people here in South Florida. So that's probably why I see several stores. So I like the white chocolate. I like the Yorkies. I do like the biscuit, the sweet biscuit one. I forget what's it called. But they haven't had the cotton cheese in stock. So I'm waiting for that to happen.
Well, you know what? There's lots of stuff like that. There's lots of, like, everyday basic things that we see here that's like delicacies. But it's the same, you know, like we have a lot of independent shops, independent retailers that try to stock a lot of the American delicacies, and supermarkets now in the UK, they do try to have like a world foods aisle where you'll kind of find the odd little bit of stuff from America, but most of it's from sort of Eastern Europe. But like, you do have independent retailers that stock a lot of the delicacies from America, like your Twinkies and your Nerds and, you know, more of the sort of the sweet range. But then like, you get your crisps and you get like your fizzy drinks, like you get certain Fantas in America that you can't get here. Like, they have to import them to the UK. And like, for us, it's like, oh wow, we've never seen like a blue Fanta, a bubblegum flavored Fanta before. Whereas like in America, it's just box standard for you to go and pick one up from the store. So, you know, it's quite fun. So, you know, we enjoy having then that sort of exchange, and we like sending each other these random bits of food that's probably quite mind blowing to each other.
Exactly. And oh, and also, by the way, USA plays England in the World Cup this year. How you feel about that?
Oh yeah, gotta touch on that. Yeah, USA and England.
Black Friday.
The USA have always, like, they've had moments in football or soccer, as you guys call it. They've had moments in soccer where the US teams look pretty good. You know, they've had a lot of US players come to the Premier League.
I think we've caught up, but that's my opinion.
I'm not sure about that. But I think if soccer in the US was more of a predominant sport and people were more invested in the sport, I think it wouldn't take long for the US to be on par with a lot of the huge teams of the world. But I think because there's so many other sports that take precedent in the US as opposed to soccer, that's why I don't think it'll always be at the same level. Where England, it's like one of the most predominant, if not the most predominant sport in the UK. So like, everything goes into football, all the money goes into football. Whereas in the US, it's like you've got the NFL, the XFL, the Major League Baseball, the National Hockey League, you know, all these different sports that all the money gets piled into. And soccer's probably about eight or nine on the list or something like that. So that's probably why it'll never really get to that level, I don't think, unless people's perceptions change.
Yeah, that is correct. That is, you know, a lot of money is poured to NFL. Now the XFL coming out next year, owned by The Rock, actually. So it's a long way to go, but hey, as long as Christian Pulisic, you know, scores for Chelsea, you know, we'll definitely keep our name in the radar. Anyways, you can reach us at thesportscast.net or thesportscast1 on Twitter. And tonight is Jersey Boys. They'll be previewing the NFL draft next week, which is a big event, by the way, Sean. NFL draft is not as big as the Super Bowl, but it's where they draft players from college football and could be the future of this NFL team, for example. So next Thursday night is going to be a big party, but I'll be watching the boxing match this week, Fury versus White. Looking forward to it. 2 p.m. Eastern. I can't complain. I have to watch it. I can't. There's no excuses.
Nope, there's no excuses. I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to the fight. I hope everybody tunes in America, because genuinely, my last word on this fight is like, and I hope it doesn't come back to bite me, but I think this will be a fight to remember. I think this will be a fight that casual fight fans, people that don't tune in that often, will tune into it and they will walk away with it thinking, wow, that was great. That was a great watch. And you never know, it might entice more people to want to watch the sport more. Hey, let's see what happens.
Will it be monumental?
I hope so. I hope so, for the sake of British boxing, that it isn't a stinker. And I hope so for all them 94,000 fans that have paid really good money to go to Wembley Stadium and have that experience, because it's an experience that probably only comes round once, maybe twice in a lifetime.
Exactly. Well, get those pies ready. Sean Bastow, always a pleasure for you coming on to the Sportscast.
Thanks so much. Pleasure. Speak to you soon.
And this was your update.